Hello and welcome to this week's Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, as always, Chris McDaniel, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in studio is...
Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
And also joining us through the phone is...
Marshall Griffin, the State Capitol reporter.
Marshall, let's get right down to it. You've been covering a particular story for us.
A kerfluffle.
That some are unhappy that it hasn't been covered. Others are happy that it is being covered. Regardless, it's about 70% of the stories for the past couple of weeks. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, of course, we're talking about the ongoing controversy surrounding the scanning of source documents for concealed carry weapons endorsements and also for driver's licenses. The week kind of just started out with a bang on, pardon the pun there, unintentional pun.
We're all about puns here.
Yeah, started out with a bang, so to speak, on Monday, on tax day of all days, when Brian Long suddenly resigned as the director of the Department of Revenue. This email came from the governor's office, and
He hadn't been in office for very long, has he?
No, only since mid-December.
Yeah.
He had replaced, I believe, Alana Barragán Scott. I hope I got the name correct there. Mm-hmm. He took over in mid-December, and it was right about the time that he took over that the new policy of scanning source documents began. Of course, something that was not announced, something that didn't become known really publicly until this lawsuit down in the boot heel was filed back in the early March. And the press conference announcing that lawsuit that was held here at the Capitol with Lieutenant Governor Kinder and the prosecuting attorney from Stoddard County. So that's where it all started. It snowballed into committee hearings to a subpoena being issued by Senator Schaefer from Appropriations, which in turn led to denials from Governor Nixon that any information is being sent to Washington, and we need to focus more time on the need to expand Medicaid. Finally, culminating Monday with the sudden resignation effective immediately of Brian Long, and after the question, of course, is well, was he fired? Was he asked to resign? All I can tell you is that I emailed Scott Holstein, the press secretary for the governor, who said no, he was not fired. He was not encouraged to resign. It was Long's decision completely.
So, yeah, and I read the resignation letter, and it said something to the effect of it's taken a toll on me and my family over the last 4 months more than I expected. I mean, it didn't really cite a specific reason. It didn't say I'm quitting because this DOR situation is causing me too much stress, per se. But from reading that letter, you could infer that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
So, but continue, Marshall.
The follow-up that happened after that was the announcement that the scanning of source documents for concealed carry applicants would also cease happening. It didn't say immediately, but it did say that it would no longer take place.
But only for conceal and carry, not for birth certificates to get
right.
A driver's license. So.
Right, just for concealed carry applicants. And, of course, that distinction happened after it was revealed in Senate hearings that the whole list of concealed carry endorsements was compiled by DOR and given to the Highway Patrol, who in turn on two occasions, November 2011 and January of this year, gave it to the Social Security Administration for what they were told was a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kurt Schaefer has said, based on what he has seen and what he believes, is that it was more of a intelligence gathering operation to want to know who in Missouri has concealed carry permits, and didn't really look to him like it was a criminal investigation. But that's what was told to us, basically that was the case. And as we found out later as well, there was at the Medicaid rally, the governor basically afterwards had a press availability with reporters, and all the questions were about the concealed carry DOR controversy. The governor was not very happy about that.
No, he wasn't.
It was a kerfuffle.
It's where he used that word and basically said that this was a giant distraction to keep people away from talking about Medicaid. Although, as we've discussed last week, I mean, that issue is pretty much dead in the water in the legislature. I mean, the Senate has said that in no uncertain terms. And it's funny because Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder sent out this tweet a couple days ago, but reporters asked Nixon during the campaign about his position, about whether he wanted to expand Medicaid multiple times.
Right.
His answer was, well, we're going to study this issue and wait and wait. And, you know, I don't think he was that jazzed about reporters continually asking that question then. And then, you know, now that's all he wants to talk about, apparently. So it's an interesting reversal of focus.
Yeah, one of the things that I find odd is that, you know, Republicans and Democrats, depending on their respective issues, they're complaining that, you know, either Medicaid or the DOR scandal aren't being covered enough. And really, those are like the two biggest issues that people actually are covering. They've been having a lot of coverage, both on Medicaid rallies, which Nixon has had, you know, just a huge number of them. And they're all not very different. And the DOR whole thing, which Marshall has been covering. So.
Yeah. And it kind of to piggyback on that point, although Marshall told us offline that he wasn't in the chamber, State Senator Brian Nieves of Washington admonished reporters because apparently DOR hasn't been covered enough. He even used the full names of Jeremiah J. Nixon and Christopher Koster. Very
now,
dramatic,
do we,
very enthusiastic.
Do we know Christopher Koster's middle name, though? Because I feel like if we knew Christopher Koster's middle name,
I don't know.
It would have
even
been
though
more
I wasn't
admonishment.
In the chamber, I did actually obtain an audio copy of that. Dialogue, and it's very similar to what I've heard him say before, and I can, you know, and I've seen him go on similar diatribes before. So
now,
I can imagine what it looked like.
I listened to the whole thing too, and there was one point that he brought up that was a little troubling, in that this entire list of conceal and carry holders with their Social Security numbers and their names and their addresses. It was snail mailed to somebody with the password on it. And I think what he was trying to get to was, if for some reason this got misplaced or, you know, mailed to the wrong person, and it could mean that somebody could have had a list of tens of thousands of names and their Social Security numbers, which could have been a privacy disaster in many cases. I think that you know, flair and enthusiasm aside, that does seem to be a legitimate concern. Would you gather that same conclusion, Marshall?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's an identity thief's dream, to be able to get the Social Security numbers of that many people, you know, in one easy to access format, you know, in one place. And I mean, this is. You know, this is not over. You know, even though Brian Long is out and the governor has said that we will not scan these anymore, there's still been no word as to, well, what about the records that have been scanned so far? Will they be destroyed? And there hasn't really been an answer to that question.
The budget
allocation for the Motor Vehicles Division is still at zero.
And I actually read an article that the former revenue director, who's now an administrative law judge, they've taken money out to fund her position, apparently. Mm-hmm. And that's not terribly surprising. And I also read that Schaefer wants her to testify at some point, because the thing was, a lot of these initiatives happened during her tenure in office, and then she left, and then Brian Long had to kind of explain all of these things. I don't think he was personally responsible for a lot of what went on. I think, though, that what Republicans said, such as Schaefer, that he just didn't handle the questioning particularly well, and that was one of the sources of criticism. I didn't witness how he responded, as Marshall did. So I can't really make a judgment on his goodness or badness in that respect, but I think that was kind of worth noting. So,
I should also mention that as hard as Senator Schaefer and some of the other Republicans on the Appropriations Committee were when they were questioning Long, once Long was out, they basically all said, "Well, you know, Long is being made a scapegoat. He's being you know, he's being the sacrificial lamb for what someone else put in place. And they said, you know, they actually surprisingly expressed a little bit of sympathy for him. But, you know, they're very serious about, you know, denying the budget allocations for Ms. Scott and also for the division of motor vehicles. The budget debates start next week. They start Monday afternoon, and they've already, you know, the Appropriations Committee has already passed all the budget bills minus those allocations. So they're very serious about withholding money until they get answers.
Now I'm going to do
at least answers they're satisfied with.
Now I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball.
I'm going to
ask something and kind of go on a topic that we didn't discuss before the show. But were you at Speaker Jones's news conference where he was asked whether he was going to run for something in 2016?
Yes, I was there.
Okay, could kind of explain what happened there.
Well, basically, all that happened there was Elizabeth Crisp from the Post-Dispatch got the first question in, and that was her question. Do you plan on running for other offices? You know, if you decided what your future is going to be yet once you're done with being Speaker of the House? And Speaker Jones started to say, well, yeah, that he said there's three particular offices that have, you know, an enforcement component to them, and those were Attorney General, State Auditor, and Secretary of State. He said all three of those offices were interesting to him. He did seem to, you know, slightly favor Attorney General when answering that question, but he also left open the possibility that he could run for one of those other two offices. He said, it's too early, I haven't made my mind up yet. And then I got in a follow-up question asking him, well, do you have any interest in being over in the other chamber as a senator, which evoked laughter among the House leaders there.
Because he's in Brian Nieves's district,
yes.
i.e. he would have to primary Nieves if he wanted that seat. And frankly, he would be a pretty strong candidate simply because St. Louis County makes up half of his district and he's the Speaker of the House and has a lot of money. So that's not, but they're kind of on the same political sphere. So it's just unlikely that that would occur. But continue, Marshall.
Unlikely. And plus, I do think he has statewide aspirations.
Yeah, so, he's always been pretty blunt, you know, about his aspirations for after he's Speaker.
Yeah, the reason I threw that question in is there's been kind of a lot of chatter on Twitter. And I mean, it's 2013 now. I know 2016 is a long way, but this is coming from a guy who wrote a 2,200-word article about Koster solidifying his base among the Democratic gubernatorial primary. But nevertheless, there's been kind of this chatter that Schaefer and Jones are kind of on this collision course for the Attorney General primary in 2016. So I found it interesting that Jones left the door open to run for something else like Secretary of State, which would kind of, you know, prevent, at least in that case, from Republicans having a primary in that situation. Though, you know, Catherine Hanaway, who we've talked about in this show before, the former Speaker of the House, has talked about possibly running for governor or for Attorney General too. So it's possible that there may be a primary anyways, but that has been kind of one of the undercurrents of this DOR scandal or controversy. I know that some people don't like to call it a scandal, is that Schaefer and Jones are kind of using it to maybe expand their statewide profile and their conservative credentials a little bit. In the case of Schaefer, it's actually kind of interesting because having formally covered him in Columbia, he ran in 2008 as this moderate, reasonable candidate. He even had John Danforth come in and do a fundraiser for him. And I believe he had him come in again in 2012. So it is kind of interesting he is embracing this social issue of guns in many respects, because that wasn't an emphasis in his other few years. But since, you know, Department of Revenue's funding falls within the jurisdiction of the Appropriations Committee, which he is a chairman, it does somehow make sense on that front. And I know he's not the only Republican who is talking about this issue. I don't know if you wanted to chime in, Marshall, but that was just kind of my observation there.
I will chime in as far as his running as a somewhat moderate Republican in both of his Senate races. A lot of that also had to do with the district he represented. Columbia is a very heavily Democratic area, and the first time that he ran, he defeated an incumbent who was having a little bit of political scandal of his own involving a DUI arrest and whether or not he may have tried to pressure state authorities to drop the charges or to at least reduce the severity of them. That I think Schaefer benefited from that, and then he also benefited from 4 years of pretty strong record in the Senate. Yeah, but he had to pretty much run as a moderate and not be seen as a so-called right wing Republican.
But
now he doesn't have to worry about being reelected to the Senate. Maybe he can freed up a bit to express his any more conservative leanings he may have.
And it should also be noted that now his district has Cooper County, which is a very conservative rural county. So in that sense, the situation has changed for him a little bit. But I know curveballs here on Politically Speaking. We didn't talk about this topic beforehand, but I thought it was an interesting segue.
And certainly the chance to go after whatever may have happened with these concealed carry records and the process of scanning and whether or not all these records and copies of records are being held in a database to go to Homeland Security. Being able to get out in the public in front of this and attack something like that certainly doesn't hurt his appeal as a statewide candidate in the near future. It's certainly convenient in that aspect.
And just as a Politically Speaking bonus, I'll just mention a few people on the Democratic side that I've heard running for attorney general, since it's assumed that Koster will run for governor. Mm-hmm. I've heard Jackson County executive Mike Sanders. Somebody's thrown out the name of Jackson County prosecutor Gene Peters Baker. I've thought possibly Scott Sifton of South County as a possibility. Kevin McManus of Kansas City has been thrown out. So there are potential Democratic candidates, but it's very early in that respect, and it'll probably be a while before that side formulates. But a lot of talk is on the GOP side, considering there are two candidates who I would say would be pretty legitimate candidates for that position. So,
and if I can throw a little curveball of my own here,
hey, bring it on.
One of the things that got some Twitter attention this week also was the race, more of an inside baseball thing, the race for House Speaker. Rick Stream put out a tweet earlier this week that he has endorsed John Deal to be the next House Speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that actual election won't happen until November of 2014, after next year's general election. But the Republican caucus is presumed to be gathering perhaps this September around veto session to go ahead and pick among themselves who they want to put up for House Speaker.
It seems, though, that it's not going to be a very heavily contested contest.
No.
The last heavily contested Speaker's race was between now Senator Ron Richard and former Representative Alan Isett in 2007. And that was actually a very interesting and very consequential race for the House Republicans. Marshall, I don't know if you were in Jefferson City yet for that, but it seems since then they have kind of just picked the successors without too much acrimony or competition. And that seems to be going in that direction here. So,
yeah, basically not wanting to repeat something that was that acrimonious. Yeah, 2007, it was my first year here. I was still kind of learning the ropes and learning what was where. So.
Yeah, yeah. So closer to home, though, there was an inauguration of Mayor Schaefer, an unprecedented historic four-year term.
Yes.
I was there. Rachel Lipman
was also there. For us.
Richard Callow both took pictures of both of us.
That will be in the next campaign mailer, I'm sure.
That was a horrible picture of me. My wife just was aghast by it. But I got a picture of him, which apparently there's not many pictures of him. He's very mysterious.
Yes.
But it was actually an interesting experience because the mayor had a fairly brief inaugural address. I think he actually did that purposefully. He laid out some broad goals for the next few years. And he said something that caught a lot of people's attention, that he confidently expected the city to rejoin the county by the end of the decade, which would mean that, you know, if he was the person to help do that, he would have to, you know, run again in 2017. And there's a whole bunch of what ifs there. It was an interesting statement, because I think we've talked about that on this show, about the city rejoining the county as a municipality by, you know, 2019. I don't know if it'll be the 90th or 91st or 80th if all these other municipalities cease to exist. But I do think that if that does happen, it would require a vote, either a statewide vote or more likely a vote with St. Louis City and St. Louis County.
Right.
And one thing that I've been pondering, beyond just how the county council would be structured, whether you have to put more people, whether you'd have to draw a map, is just if that happens and there are, you know, 250,000 to 300,000 more Democratic voters added to the county, it would effectively make it impossible for Republicans to, first of all, control the county council, although now they really haven't been putting up a lot of fight on that. But also, it would just make it impossible for them to ever compete for the county executive office ever again. It would kind of be similar to what happens in Jackson County, where Kansas City proper is part of Jackson County and Platte County and Clay County. And because of that, there really hasn't been a serious Republican challenge for that office. And I think you would see a similar situation there. And the reason I bring that up is it would not surprise me then, in whatever election cycle they have to vote on that, if the state Republican Party got involved and tried to stop that from happening, just because they see that as an opportunity to build the Republican Party in a very populous area. And it's another wrinkle to that whole situation, because it's more of a political consideration to think of, as opposed to the practical implications of them merging, or, you know, merging is not the right word, but the city rejoining the county. But it is something to think about going forward. And one of the reasons why the Slay being confident that it'll happen may not be a sure thing. The other thing was that the Board of Aldermen also got inaugurated before the mayor and comptroller Darlene Green. They're actually, most of the members are the same except for two, mm-hmm. Christine Ingrassi of the 6th Ward, Sharon Tyus of the 1st Ward. Sharon Tyus actually is back in the Board of Aldermen after, I think, a decade-long absence. Very sharp person, an attorney, and I think will make a big impact on the board. Same with Ingrassi, very sharp, very promising. And it'll be interesting to watch to see how this board interacts with the mayor going forward in the next couple of years. So that was more of me blabbering on than usual, but I don't think you were there. So
I was not there.
You could only
assume. I followed along online. But I did also see that President of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, did announce that he will be running for another term as Board of Aldermen president.
Yes, he did. I don't know if we've discussed that on this show
yet. I don't
think
we have.
And I think that the assumption is he will not be going into that race
uncontested, challenged. Yeah.
Because he was unchallenged in the last race, which I believe was 2011. In fact, the only person he had to beat was a Green Party candidate. And we've seen from the last election that the Green Party, while, you know, mm-hmm. you know, they're on the ballot, they just haven't been able to make a lot of traction as far as beating people. And, you know, the people...
It's early yet, but he does have debt from running against Slay.
Yeah, he does. But it's not, what is it, like $28,000?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And he has like $86,000 on hand, I think. I could be wrong about that. But he could probably pay off that debt with the amount of money he still has. I think you're searching on that computer now to make sure I haven't made a horrible error in judgment. But my point is it's debt, but it's not like a crushing, insurmountable debt that he can't pay off if he is actively raising money for his reelection. But, you know, a couple people that have been brought up as possibilities, Dave Drivas of Mo Scout brought up Lydia Crewson of the 28th Ward as a possibility. She ran for the Board of Aldermen presidency, I think, in the 1990s. Another person that's been floated around is Jeffrey Boyd, who ran for treasurer the last year. He's also been floated as a possibility. And, you know, I don't know who will actually file for that race. That's a 2015 race. We're going way into the future here. But, you know, that's probably the next big election to look forward to beyond whatever aldermanic race has happened then. So,
yeah, Reed has $25,000 in campaign cash currently and $41,000 in debt. So okay. he is a little bit in debt, but not – there's plenty of time.
Okay, so I obviously overstated his amount, but my point...
I think you were referring to 8 days before the campaign.
Yeah, I think that was probably what I was looking at, but my point kind of remains the same.
Yes.
I do think that, you know, it's never good to be in debt, but I think that's a pretty common thing to happen after a pretty competitive campaign, and that amount of money, while not insignificant, I do think if he is actively fundraising, he could probably pay that back.
Yeah, I mean, for the mayor's race, he raised $700,000. So compared to that, it's not that much. But
and just to point out, the mayor has $374,000 still on hand. So if he wants to throw the world's biggest samba party in front of the arch, he can do that.
You heard it here first. World's biggest samba party. We'll announce the date later on as soon as we get our invites. We'll be back next week to talk more about samba parties and other important issues. You can follow me on Twitter at @CSMcDaniel. You can follow Jason on Twitter at
@JRosenbaum.
You can follow Marshall on Twitter at
@MarshallGReport.
Marshall and I's stories are at stlpublicradio.org. Jason's stories and Joe, who should be back next week, can be found at stlbeacon.org. Joe should be back next week. I think she's back in St. Louis now from her vacation. So I look forward to that.
We're looking forward to having her back. But thank you again, Marshall, for your help over the last few weeks.
Oh, you're very welcome.
We'll be back next week. Until then, so long.
Bye.
Bye.